From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the latest edition of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Michael Lev, and special thanks to Frog and Firkin. Throughout the summer, about once a month, they allow us to come out here and host a live podcast for the folks that are having a bite to eat and are wondering what we're doing. We are the Wildcast podcast. We're a part of the Arizona Daily Star. We provide in-depth analysis and coverage on your Arizona Wildcats, and since it is August, college football season is quickly approaching. Here with Michael Lev. Lev, before we get started, make sure to the people here at Frog and Firkin and also the people that are listening to this podcast, if you want free in-depth coverage in your Arizona Wildcats, download the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. So we're on multiple platforms. We're also on Tucson.com. You can also follow the Wildcaster on all social media platforms. So, Lev, it is August, and this isn't the only live podcast we'll host at Frog and Firk. We also have one coming up during the season, when the season's getting started.
Once a week.
More than once a month. Mm-hmm. It's exciting that football is almost back. We're still kind of in that summer lull right now. As far as big time sporting events go, as I was driving over here today, I was sort of feeling like it's the calm before the storm. The students haven't arrived on campus yet. It's still a little bit quiet, but there's a lot to talk about when it comes to U of A football.
I was talking to you on my radio show on ESPN Tucson the other day, and I asked you, what's your favorite mac and cheese recipe? And why does mac and cheese tie in with Arizona Wildcats football? Well, Arizona defensive end Jalen Harris, or stud linebacker defensive end, he's an edge rusher, whatever label you want to put on him, he's going to be an edge guy, and he's going to make an impact for Arizona's defense this year. Last year he was 230, if I'm not mistaken, Michael Lev. Now this year he's 250 pounds. He looks bulky, and if Arizona's defense wants to have an identity outside of a guy like Colin Schooler, I think Jalen Harris can fit that bill. What do you think about Jalen Harris and his weight gain, which he credits to his mama's mac and cheese?
Right. Well, it's been kind of this like constant storyline since Jalen has gotten here. He has great length. He has great athleticism and quickness, but he needed to get bigger. When he was a freshman 2 years ago, he was 212 pounds on check-in day for training camp at 6'4", and he's now 6'5", 250. So, the mac and cheese is working, and whatever else he's doing, obviously he's working hard in the weight room, and he doesn't have a naturally bit like thick body, No. So it's going to be a fight for him throughout his football career to, keep on enough muscle mass. You had asked me on the show what my favorite macaroni and cheese was, and I've been thinking about it a little bit. My wife makes one that has pumpkin in it, which is kind of the secret ingredient. You don't necessarily even realize that it's in there. And it's extremely creamy also. And for whatever reason, the ingredients come together really well. As I wrote in today's paper and mentioned on your show yesterday, the recipe that Jalen's mom used it's from Oprah. Oprah's magazine, of course, and it has five cheeses and breadcrumbs on top. But as a Twitter follower astutely pointed out to me, give credit to Joanna Strone. She said, "Don't forget the essential ingredient, a mama's love." So it's not only just whatever, the actual ingredients are, but, if there's a little bit of TLC involved, I think that makes it even better.
I love mac and cheese. It's on my Mount Rushmore of foods. I'm really interested in checking out this recipe. And Jalen Harris's mom also played basketball here at the U of A.
She did, yeah. I mean, the story itself was about how both Jalen Harris and his teammate J.B. Brown come from football families. Yeah. Jalen's dad, of course, is Sean Harris, the terrific middle linebacker. Who Desert played at the U of A, yeah, in the 90s. And then J.B. Brown, all three of his brothers played college football. His closest brother, Jayon, played at UCLA and is a starting linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. So both of those kids have been around football and around sports for all of their lives. As you mentioned, Charon Harris went by a different name at the time. She played basketball here at the U of A. And I don't know. I think that matters. You know, when you're around that type of atmosphere and environment, what the conversations are, what the expectations and standards are coming from your home, coming from your parents, I think that has an impact. And I think that's one of the reasons that both of those players are excelling right now at the U of A.
And sometimes it can be just one parent that comes from athletic roots that is really trying to push you. We talked to Jalen Harris after practice. We said, what was childhood like? Were you always forced to go outside? Were you always forced to play? Were you always forced to be competitive? And when you have a dad and a mom like that, it allows you to always be competitive because they both want you to play sports. They both want you to reach your full athletic ability. And when you also have brothers to go along with that, you're around sports pretty much 24/7. I think that matters.
Charon told me that there were times when Sean would break down film with Jalen when he was in Pop Warner ball. So they're looking at Pop Warner film, okay? Jalen didn't like it. He even told us he hated it.
Want to play video games.
Like, he just wanted to play video games. Of course, he's a kid. But, you know, you never really appreciate those lessons at the time. You know, you appreciate them in retrospect. And I think he appreciates now, you know, the degree and extent to which his parents pushed him to be the best that he could be, because he might be on the verge of, you know, having a breakout season here.
Now, Jalen Harris was among one of the first members of that unit that came out during Arizona's practice this past Saturday. We talked about this on the radio. You said don't look too much into it just because some of the pieces they have may be moved around, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But what did you think about that first defensive unit? I thought the usual suspects came out. And you look at the guys coming off the edge, Kylan Wilborn and Jalen Harris, and then you have J.B. Brown and Fenton Connolly. What did you think about Arizona's defensive line when they first came out?
Yeah, Kylan Wilborn is an interesting guy because he was so good as a freshman, and he just kind of fell off the map as a sophomore. And he's one of those players where if he could regain his form to some degree, it could really have a huge impact on the Arizona defense. You know, Kevin, someone suggested that he was a little nicked up last season. He praised him for having good twitch, which is a good trait to have in a pass rusher, which to me is a sign that maybe he dropped a little bit of weight. If you look at his weight, I think it's 242, and he was listed at 248 last year. I mean, he's not a big guy. He's not going to necessarily beat you with power. He needs to beat you with speed and quickness. So he's not one of those guys who, you know, where I feel like it's a good idea for him to get too bulky, you know. Kylan needs to rush the passer and be a disruptive force back there. What was interesting is, you know, Kevin Sumlin mentioned how having J.B. Brown inside with those two guys on the outside is kind of one look that they're going to present, you know, that it might depend on the matchup. And if you saw what they looked like last night at practice, J.B. was on the outside with Jalen Harris, and the inside guys were the two junior college transfers, Miles Tapasoa and Trayvon Mason. So I think they're going to rotate a lot on the defensive line, which they absolutely need to do. I think kind of the two constants in that will be Jalen Harris and J.B. Brown, and I think you're going to see J.B. playing at multiple spots. Mm-hmm.
But what about the maybe some of the guys that are behind the starters? I'm more looking into the linebacker spot. We've heard nothing but great things about Anthony Pandy. And Tony Fields said that Pandy is listed as another starter. Even though he isn't in the starting group, he's a guy that's constantly getting in and getting snaps. What have you seen out of Anthony Pandy at practice? Because, Lev, I haven't paid too much attention to a guy like Anthony Pandy, but what do you think he could bring to Arizona's defense?
Well, I think in terms of athletic ability and upside and all of those things, that Anthony Pandy is right there on the same level with Colin Schooler and Tony Fields. He's just a little bit slower to come along in terms of processing information and making sure that he was assignment sound. I mean, those two guys were exceptions, right? Tony Fields came in from day one, literally in spring, and was like a starting linebacker for Arizona and hasn't left the lineup since. Colin Schooler didn't come in spring. He came in summer. It took him all of 5 games to become a starter. I think we've talked about this before, but kind of a fun fact is that that crazy game that Khalil Tate had at Colorado in 2017 was also Colin Schooler's first career start as an Arizona Wildcat. And he hasn't left the lineup since, and he's, you know, obviously the best player on that defense, the leader of that defense. But I feel like that any of the three of them are starting caliber players at this point. And I also think that, you know, God forbid, you know, Colin Schooler should suffer some sort of long-term injury. I'm not entirely sure that Dede Coleman, the fourth linebacker, would be the one who'd go in there and start. I could see them like maybe moving Tony Fields to the middle and having Anthony Pandy play alongside him. I view those three as the top three, and just a cut above Dede, who's still young, moved from safety to linebacker, still kind of feeling his way a little bit at that spot.
That Colorado game, how long ago does that seem? Because you were at that game when Tate went off.
Yeah, it feels like a long, long time ago. When they play there in early October this year, it'll be only 2 years, but so much has happened since then, right? We sort of saw the rise and fall to a degree of Khalil Tate. We saw a coaching change happen. You know, like so many of the principals who played integral roles in that game are no longer around. One of them is, and that's Khalil Tate. And it's going to be, of course, the number one most fascinating storyline of this upcoming season. Like, which version of Khalil Tate are we going to see? You know, are we going to see some semblance of the 2017 player who was running all over the Pac-12? Are we going to see some kind of a hybrid between that player and the guy last year who was more of a pocket passer for a variety of reasons? How effective is he going to be? And if he isn't effective early on in the season, you know, would the coaching staff possibly consider taking him out of the lineup and putting in someone like Grant Gunnell, who looks like the quarterback of the future for sure? I don't think that future is going to come until 2020.
And if you're Noel Mazzone and Kevin Sumlin, do you maybe want to keep Grant Gunnell in the back pocket? Do you think about redshirting him and keeping him for next year? Because you have that redshirt rule, right? There's only, you can play in 4 games and still redshirt for a season. So maybe they take that route with a guy like Grant Gunnell.
They are very conscious of that rule. And it sounds like Kevin Sumlin once again plans to use it to its fullest advantage.
Because he did that with the freshman quarterbacks last year as well.
He did it with a bunch of guys. I mean, I'm pretty sure there were only 4 players, newcomers to the team, who played more than 4 games last year.
Mackenzie Barnes.
PJ Johnson, Christian Young, Mackenzie Barnes, and Donovan Lai.
Donovan Lai.
That was the 4th.
Okay.
Everybody else was 4 games or less, some of it because of injuries, but some of it because of roster management. They all preserved their red shirts. I'm convinced that that's what they would like to do with Grant Gunnell. I think the ideal scenario for Arizona football this year is that Khalil Tate regains his form, takes off, is super exciting. They win a bunch of football games. Recruits get excited about things again. Khalil ends his Arizona career on a positive note. And then, you know, we have a transition that happens at quarterback starting in spring with, you know, Grant Gunnell, Kevin Doyle competing for that starting job, and then Will Plummer coming in next year's class to join the mix.
We're just talking Arizona Wildcats football right here on the Wildcast podcast. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin for hosting us once again. Lev, when you look back at all of the notes or all of the constants that you've heard from Arizona players or Arizona coaches, which one has stood out to you? Which one has been the one that's been repeated over and over and over again when we talk to these guys after practice?
Yeah, it's Jamari Joyner, right?
Tucson guy.
Yeah, that's the one that everyone seems to be mentioning. For background purposes, he came to Arizona as a quarterback, played locally, right, at Cienega High School, which you're very familiar with.
Alma mater.
Right? Yep.
Go Bobcats.
And he was kind of, you know, caught in a logjam at QB. Khalil, clearly the starter. Grant Gunnell being groomed. Kevin Doyle, you know, who's been hurt here in the early part of training camp, but someone that Noel Mazzone brought in, who they're also very high on. Rhett Rodriguez is still around as a short-term replacement guy who knows the system inside and out. That's a lot of guys, right? And Jamari was maybe falling behind a little bit, and he wanted to get on the field. So he approached the coaching staff and said that very thing. I want to play. I want to help. And, you know, they decided to move him to wide receiver, and he's been phenomenal. We've heard nothing but good things. He seems to have natural hands. You know, Tristan Cooper, whom we talked to last night, said he was surprisingly physical for an ex-quarterback. I think he's going to have a prominent role this year. Like, I wouldn't, this is a bit of a hot take, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up leading the team in receptions this year,
wow.
even ahead of Cedric Peterson. I'm convinced at this point that Joyner is going to be one of the top four heading into the season. I think it's going to be him, Cedric Peterson, Drew Dixon, and Brian Castile. Those would be probably my top four at this point. They're going to play a lot of guys. You know, I think Booby Curry is going to be in that mix. Stanley Berryhill is going to be in that mix. Zach Williams, who we haven't talked about that much, is kind of that, you know, tight end, wide receiver hybrid. He's going to be in that mix. But I think that Jamari is going to have a prominent role. He's going to be kind of, I think, playing in the – they're different body types, but I think he's going to be in that Shun Brown position, the slot receiver who's on the field all the time. And he's a bigger body, which I think, you know, if they throw him a short pass, I think maybe he can fight through some tackles a little bit better than Shun could. Shun was, you know, more of a shifty type of guy, really only about 5'9", buck 80 or so. Jamari's what, 6'2", 210, something like that. I think this could really be a boon for Arizona. If you think about it, he's just another really good explosive athlete on the field along with Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor and everybody else.
Well, when he had his senior year at Cienega, and of course, since I also cover high school football for the Arizona Daily Star, I go out to these games on Friday nights. And when I watched him play, and the game that I went to, Rich Rod, when he was the coach at the time, was on the sideline watching him. And people always came up to me saying, he's not going to play quarterback at Arizona. There's no way he's going to play quarterback. And I said, yes, he is. But at that time, that's when Rod Smith was the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. What Jamari Joyner and his skill set brings, it's exactly what Rod Smith and Rich Rod want. Now that it's Kevin Sumlin and Nomal Mazzone, a new regime, did they go after guys that are like Khalil Tate? Did they go after these dual-threat quarterbacks? So far, look at the quarterbacks that they brought in. Grant Gunnell and Kevin Doyle. Pocket-passing quarterbacks, guys that are going to get it done in the pocket. So I applaud Jamari Joyner because he's athletic. He is so fast and dynamic. He's going to bring something to Arizona's offense. And I applaud him because it wasn't Nomal Mazzone and Kevin Sumlin that made the decision for him. According to Nomal Mazzone, Joyner came up to them in the offseason and said, hey, I see that wide receiver is a possibility, a position that you guys need. I can really step in and be that guy. And Kevin Sumlin, you know what he said on Saturday? Joyner's the top 2-3 athlete on the team right now. So I think Joyner's future is very bright here in Tucson.
Here's another thing I like about that decision. He could have transferred instead, decided, you know what, I'm a quarterback. I'm convinced I'm a quarterback. I'm going to abandon ship here. I'm going to go play somewhere else. But instead, he decided, you know what? I'm a part of this team.
Selfless.
I believe in this team. I'm going to try to help this team in whatever way I can. And maybe the best way to do that is to change positions. So I think a spotlight player, fascinating storyline heading into the season is how much they're going to use him, where exactly they're going to use him. Tristan Cooper said he's been playing on the inside for the most part this year. And you can just sort of start to picture things, right? Cedric Peterson on one side, Drew Dixon, who's probably the biggest receiver on the team, him and Trey Adams, I think, pretty close. I put Zach Williams in that category, too, but he's sort of, like I said, a hybrid. And then Jamari, you know, in that slot position where you can do a lot of things. You can, you know, you can do a quick play action, hit him on the slant. You can sort of send him out into the flat on a bubble screen. You could do a trick play. You know, where maybe do a throwback pass or something of that nature. Drew Dixon has a quarterback background as well. So there's a lot of different things that Arizona can do by deploying a lot of versatile athletes on the field at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You bring up Tristan Cooper, and I don't think this should go unnoticed, but I thought he had a lot of interesting things to say last night. He is an El Paso native. I was born and raised in the city of El Paso, and you know, this past weekend, a tragedy. It was horrific. A mass shooting occurred in El Paso, and this has been a big problem in our country. And obviously, we're not going to get, you know, too much into this, Lev. But what did you think about Tristan Cooper and his comments on El Paso, and thinking about, you know, his people back home?
Yeah, I thought he was very honest and open about it. Some still raw emotions came out of him. That's kind of the way he is always anyway, no matter what the topic is. He's very passionate and doesn't really hold anything back. So it was kind of exactly what I expected. And he handled himself, I thought, with a lot of grace and dignity on what was obviously a difficult subject for him. And it saddens me that this is the second time since I've been on this beat that I've had to ask players about something like this, because, you know, in 2017, that horrible mass shooting happened in Las Vegas, and there are several Arizona players on the team from Las Vegas, and I had to talk to Justin Belknap about it and Tony Fields, and I ended up, you know, speaking to Justin's mom and Tony's dad, who, you know, we're obviously a lot closer. And I was looking back at that story, and Justin was saying that, like, a bunch of his, you know, family members were going to go to that country concert that night, and they just didn't go for whatever reason. So who knows what could have happened. It's obviously very troubling that these things are happening in our country, and you feel really bad when it affects young people, you know, who, you know, Tristan Cooper shouldn't have to talk about that sort of thing during football training camp, but that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and in El Paso, it's right there close to the border. And even though that it's right there close to the border, it's still one of the safest cities in the United States. Tristan Cooper brought it up that you just don't see these things happen in our city. And for us to be on national news for something like this, you saw his raw emotion, and you definitely saw just him just constantly thinking about his people back home.
You know, everyone at Arizona wants to play in the Rose Bowl, right? That's the goal. Arizona's never made it to the Rose Bowl. It's probably not realistic to think that it can happen this year, but who knows? On the other hand, it would be pretty cool, I think, if Arizona made it to the Sun Bowl this year. Partly because of what happened and how awesome it's going to be for that community to have that event there, which is, you know, they roll out the red carpet. It's a very big deal in El Paso. They value that bowl and what it brings. Arizona hasn't played in the Sun Bowl in a really long time. You know, the fans are going to travel out there. It's an easy destination to get to. It's a bowl game that still has some historical kind of value, you know, no matter what the sponsor is. It's still like the Sun Bowl. It's a cool setting. It's usually played in the afternoon. You know, it's been on CBS for a long time. CBS doesn't have a lot of bowl games. Like, there's something to it beyond, like, a lot of the just whatever Corporation X bowl type games out there. Which, just to me, it would be a really cool thing to happen if Arizona made it there. Fitting and an awesome way for Tristan Cooper to end his college football career if it does turn out that way.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You heard of
that earlier today. It just feels like it would be poetic justice to some extent.
Shifting gears, you want to talk some Cruton?
Sure.
Do you call it Cruton?
Well, I mean, not all the time, but sure, if that's Cruton. What you want to call it.
Let's talk some Cruton, all right? Lev, so last week, Bijan Robinson, who's a five-star running back here in Tucson, he committed to Texas. Why does that have any ties to Arizona? Well, he becomes the latest South Point Catholic player to commit to a school that's not in-state. A couple days earlier, his offensive lineman, Bruno Fina, son of John Fina, who was an Arizona Wildcat, former NFL standout, he decided to go to UCLA. A couple weeks before that, Lathan Ransom commits to Ohio State, another South Point Catholic kid not going to the school 5 minutes up the street. Lev, is this a problem for Arizona not landing the best of the best in the city of Tucson? Normally, what you'd want to do is you want to put up a fence around your state, around your city, to make sure kids are staying home. And this isn't just a problem with Arizona. ASU's having a problem with this as well in Phoenix. Kids in state are not staying home. Is this a problem for the schools?
I'm going to say yes and no. I mean, yes, in the sense that they didn't land any of those guys, but no, in the sense that, you know, Kevin Sumlin and his staff are still playing catch up when it comes to a lot of these kids. As you know, the relationships that are built with recruits, that's the most important aspect of the entire deal. And those relationships start when those kids are freshmen or sophomores, right? By the time Kevin Sumlin and his staff got here, those kids were sophomores heading into their junior year, right? So you're behind from the beginning. And DeMarco Murray, the running backs coach, didn't arrive on the scene until, you know, those guys had finished their junior years. I mean, if DeMarco Murray is here 2 years ago and is able to kind of build a relationship with fellow running back Bijan Robinson, who has already told us that he does have a relationship with DeMarco, but if that had been in place for years instead of just months, you know, by the time Bijan is ready to make a decision, maybe he chooses to come here. You know, we mentioned Jamari Joyner and Drew Dixon. They're both local kids. Stanley Berryhill is another local kid, so they are getting some. They have two of the top 30 recruits from the state of Arizona committed for next year, right? And Will Plummer and Dylan Miller, right? They're working hard on Jalen Harris's brother, Jason Harris, who plays in Gilbert and would
kind of
be
fish.
The critical guy to make this class a success, you know, when it comes to recruiting in state. But my take on the whole thing overall is give them time.
Yeah,
you know, they offered the freshman quarterback, right, at Sal Point, whose name is
Trayson Bourget,
right? So they're on him early, which is a good sign. I don't think they're going to stop trying. I think, you know, Kevin Sumlin's kids, his sons, are moving here, and I think they're going to attend Sal Point. So that's only going to build the relationship and make it that much stronger. So I guess give them time.
Yeah.
It is important. It's not something that they can ignore. Kevin Sumlin has said it time and again, like, Arizona is their first priority. There's a lot of talent at Sal Point. There's a ton of talent in the Phoenix area. They do need to get some of those players in every single recruiting class.
And I don't think they're getting necessarily the upper echelon of recruits. They're not getting the top shelf recruits. They're getting the second tier guys. You mentioned top 30 recruits. A lot of the guys that are in, that are ranked higher, are going to SEC, they're going to Big Ten, they're, you know, going to these big-time programs that are going to give them national TV exposure. But you mentioned Dylan Miller, who is the top wide receiver for arguably the top school in Arizona, in Centennial. You know, they're also getting Will Plummer, they're getting a quarterback. And then one recruit that I think is very important that you didn't mention, Lev, Reagan Terry, the Florence defensive end. I know his family has coaching ties with Boston College, so Arizona has an uphill battle just in that sense. But if they can get Jason Harris and Reagan Terry to commit, both Arizona guys, I believe both of them are 4-star. Reagan Terry might be a 3-star. If both of them with big bodies as defensive ends come to Arizona, that might be a win. Even though you miss out on the South Point kids.
That would change the perception, I think. And even though Reagan Terry has ties to Boston College, I wouldn't rule it out. They put on the full court press for him the other day when we were there. We saw him, you know, he went into that Arizona Experience room and he came out in a uniform and he did the whole thing, taking pictures on the field and all that stuff. And he listed Arizona in his top six, which is a good sign. So I think they're in the running for him. And you know what? You can never have enough pass rushers, right? The more pass rushers you can bring in, the better, as we know from watching Arizona football and all of football. If you can rush the passer with four guys and not have to blitz to create pressure, I mean, that changes everything for a defense. One of the big objectives for this year's defense, create more pressure in third down situations, more turnovers, get the other team off the field at a greater frequency than they have.
Michael Lev, 18 days until Arizona's season opener against Hawaii. Week zero is approaching, my friend.
Yeah, I'm not ready.
No one ever.
I got a lot of work to do between now and then, basically. Yeah.
And then,
so as soon as I leave here, you know, right back at it.
When's the last time you've been to Hawaii?
I've been to Hawaii, I want to say four times, maybe five. A few times for work, a few times my wife and I went. We did our honeymoon in Kauai and Maui. But it's been a while. I think she said it's been like 9 years maybe since we last went. You know, we had a couple kids, so that makes it a little bit harder. But they're older now, and we're all going to go, and it should be a good time.
9 years ago. You were covering USC at that point, right?
That's correct, yes.
Wow.
This was the transition from Pete Carroll to Lane Kiffin.
What a time to be a college football writer.
It really was.
Well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Special thanks to the good people at Frog and Firkin for always hosting us. We appreciate it. We'll be back before the season opener against Hawaii. Or the 22nd. August 22nd will be the exact date. Can't wait.
Cool.
Thanks to Frog and Firkin and to all the people here listening at Frog and Firkin and also listening to this podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app on the App Store and Google Play. For Lev, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.